2021 marks the 150th anniversary of one of Ireland's most well-known playwrights, poets, and John Millington Synge. He's become synonymous, of course, with the Irish literary revival at the turn of the last century. His infamous work, Playboy of the Western World, sparked riots when it opened in the Abbey Theatre on the 26th of January 1907. Writer and poet Sean Hewitt has just published a new book on Synge, which reassesses many of his works and looks more closely at Synge's engagement with occultism, socialism and Darwinism. I'm delighted to have Sean join with us this evening. His background is very interesting in terms of what you've looked at in this book, I think, Sean. Wealthy Protestant family, but from an early age, he had difficulties with some of the family's business, particularly around tenants being evicted. Did he assert any influence over the family in terms of getting them to change their ways?
Well, yeah, he did have some arguments with his mother, which I don't think went down too well, but he did have a small victory. He managed to get them to change the family paper subscription from the Daily Express to the Irish Times, which he thought was a slightly better paper. His mum said it was a rebel paper, but she was happy enough to change it. So small steps, but he managed a bit. But he was really conscious all the way through his life, actually, of this imbalance in his own views. He was a socialist, and he was well aware of his own social standing and economic standing in relation to the people that he was so artistically interested in.
Yeah, and there he had that artistic interest, particularly in what we might refer to as the Irish peasantry. A difficult position for somebody from a much higher social class. You know, the accusation of gaze, I suppose, would be one that we would perhaps level at him nowadays. Did he manage to avoid that?
He did in some ways, and some Irish language scholars, Daniel Corkery, for example, has suggested that Synge, in learning Irish and in spending sustained amount of time, he visited the Aran Islands over a period of 4 years, and he travelled in the congested districts in the west of Ireland and wrote journalism for the Guardian from them. And so there is always this this gaze happening, and Synge brings a lot of his own preconceptions to what he wants to, you know. We might see the peasantry in Synge as a projection of what Synge wants to see. He wants to find a primitive, wild population. He doesn't want to find a population that's undergoing modernization. And yet he finds that. He finds a gradually modernizing peasantry, and that's the central tension really in Synge's work is him trying to reconcile this romantic imagination with the reality of the life of the peasantry.
And that romantic imagination, as you refer to it, there's quite often present in a kind of a high-flown version of the language that he puts into the mouths of his characters. Let's listen to a clip from the Playboy of the Western World, and this comes from 1982 production, Gary Hines' production of Synge's The Playboy of the Western World. Breed Brennan as Peggy Mike, Mick Lally as Old Man, Melissa Stafford as the Playboy, and the Widow Quinn played by Marie Mullen.
You'll be doing like myself, I'm thinking, when I did destroy me men. For I'm above many's the day, odd times in great spirits, darning a stocking or stitching a shift, and odd times again, looking out on the schooners, hookers, trawlers as sailing the seas. And I thinking on the gallant, hairy fellas as drifting beyond. And myself, long years living low.
You're like me, so.
I am your like. And it's for that I'm taking a fancy to you. And I would me little housheen, where there'd be myself to tend you. And none to ask were you a murderer or what at all.
And what would I be doing if I left Peggy?
I've grand jobs you could be doing. Gathering seashells to make a whitewash for our hut within. Building up a little goose house. Or stretching a new skin on an old quarrock I have. And if my hut is fair from all sides, it's there you'll meet the wisest old men, I'm telling you. At the corner of my wheel. And it's there yourself and me will have great times, whispering and hugging.
The Widow Quinn, played by Marie Mullen there, with her proposal, like, shall we call it, to Melissa Stafford in the Playboy of the Western World from that Gary Hines production from 1982. Sean Hewitt speaking to me this evening about his new book on Sing. That, there we go. That was the line that caused all the trouble in the Abbey in 1907. Stitching a shift. Surely it was more than that that caused a riot, Sean.
It was more than that. And I would say that there were two protests going on that night. There was the protesters, the rioters in the audience, but there was also Sing staging a protest of his own against this image of the Irish peasantry as virtuous, as pure, as uncorrupted. And Sing wanted to stage his own protest against that. So it was perhaps not orchestrated with intent, but it was definitely provoked on purpose.
Yeah, they're definitely orchestrated, is what you're saying, on that night. But you refer to in this, and I was kind of surprised to read about this, the whole links with Yeats rather than differences from Yeats, because when we think of Yeats, often it is putting this kind of high mystical quality around Celtic mythology and putting that on the stage rather than the ordinary people, if you like, that we get in the plays of Sing. Are they more alike than perhaps we think?
I think they are. And it's important, I think, to... These people, the characters in Sing's plays, might appear to be similar to ordinary people, but they are also stylized ordinary people. As you can, we can hear in that language there the meter, the poetry. These are literary constructs. But yeah, you're right that Sing had interests that branched out towards Yeats too. This occultism, mysticism, we can see it coming through in the Aran Islands, and in fact, if we look at the archives in Trinity College, they have a big array of Sing archives. And in fact, they're online, they're digitized now, so people can go and look. But Sing had interests in telepathy, in Buddhism, in Christian mysticism, and all of these things, even if they're not quite explicit in the plays, they all feed in to Sing's vision of this peasantry that is romantic and imaginatively free and connected to the natural world and has this kind of spiritual relationship to nature.
Yes, the clip that we just heard, the beautiful romance and a romantic and sensual quality to the language in that, but there's also great violence in many of the works as well.
Yeah, Sing was... I suppose we might almost summarize Sing's plays by thinking about how do we sustain a dream in dire circumstances. So there's always this undercurrent of violence. There's always this undercutting of poverty or alcoholism or violence, like you say. And the dream has to be rooted in that. He describes poetry as being sort of like a tree. It has to have roots in the earth, and any poetry that doesn't have roots in the earth is not worth anything. So that romantic dream has to be counterbalanced with this quite brutal undercurrent.
And yet Yeats, WB, referred to or described Sing as, quote, unfitted to think a political thought. Was he hearing a very different Sing from the one I think many of us today hear?
Yeah, I think Yeats created his own Sing for his own purposes. And we see Yeats doing this often with the Abbey, with the theatrical project. He wanted to position Sing as this genius, this insular artist that was unaffected by politics, was above it, and wanted to speak to something timeless. But Sing was a very political thinker, and indeed we can see the progression of his plays coming from this root in socialism and in ideas of social justice too.
Briefly and finally then, Sean, you might one of the things you do at the end of the book is Sing died at the age of 37, and you know he had a great background in European theatre. What do you think we might have got from him had he had the chance to finish many of the unfinished plays that were already there?
I think we might actually look to Beckett as a sort of afterlife of Sing. We can see in Sing's draft plays that he left behind when he died this increasing interest in static figures on the stage. There's one play where all of the characters are in beds and they're speaking from the beds, and we can see, you know, that reaching forward to Beckett. There's also a play set in the year 2000.
Ahead of his time, for sure.
He was thinking ahead, but we may have seen a much more overtly modernist theatre from Sync, I think, going forward,
Well, thanks for speaking to us this evening. That's Sean Hewitt, and Sean's book, J.M. Sync, Nature, Politics and Modernism, is published by Oxford University Press. That is our lot for this evening. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields research. Janice Furphy was the broadcast coordinator. Gar Duffy was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme was produced by Sinead Egan. Talk to you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock here on RTÉ Radio 1.